Well, I taught at a variety of places and had been tenured at a variety of places in Philadelphia and New York City at New York University Medical School at a biological psychiatry institute where we were doing, I thought, state-of-the-art research in a couple of areas. But I was attracted to the lifestyle here, the students here, the town. And I came for an interview because a friend of mine or a friend of a friend said, hey, we have this opening. Why don't you consider coming here? And I did for an interview and really just fell in love with the people, the students, and the lifestyle here. And I've lived Chicago, New York, Washington, D.C., Los Angeles. I've lived in Scotland and New Orleans. And this is my favorite place to live. And I like it here and planning on staying.
So tell us a little bit about your background before you came to ULM, not only working in psychology, but you have a pretty varied background beyond that.
Right. I went to graduate school a little later in life. I am a clinical psychologist, and generally the people that are clinical psychologists go to graduate school immediately after undergraduate. It's kind of like being an MD, and there's that kind of bias. I took some time off. I bicycled across Europe, came back, and worked a little bit in the hospital, but also was a stand-up comedian, or tried to be. Did that for about 3 or 4 years, and that was fun. Got to meet people that are now, you know, just the big names.
And but you made a living at it, though.
Yeah, made a living. And it wasn't necessarily a great living, but it was, you know, sometimes it was a good living, sometimes not.
Well, that's saying a lot because a lot of people don't. That's their side job and they're doing something else.
Exactly. But I got out of it when I realized that, you know, quite frankly, at that stage, doing 4 and 5 and 6 sets a night, there was a lot of depression, a lot of substance abuse, a lot of burnout. Just a lot of unhappiness, just shattered relationships and broken families from that type of lifestyle. And as a young person, I said, that's not a place where I want to go. Met some great people. For example, Jay Leno, one of the most genuine people that you'll meet. What you see with him is on TV nowadays was how he was back then. His idea of a good time was helping other comedians. And he did a lot of charity work that he was very, very quiet about. And was, you know, just kind of the person you'd like to have in your family because he was so, you know, darn stable and just such a beyond pleasant. He was a good man to be around. People like that sadly were, you know, very rare. And most of the folks who were doing comedy were very burned out and not necessarily angry, but they were exhausted. So that was a world I wanted to get way away from. And I was able to get a little training as a family therapist, which is interesting. Back then, they had a model that people who had been to graduate school, you know, weren't – graduate school somehow ruined you. And this was before they had the doctoral programs in family therapy like we do here, which is a great program, by the way. So I got to study with some of the big names and work in an agency that used those modalities. And then I went to graduate school in Chicago and did an internship in New Orleans and a postdoc in New Orleans and started to do serious research in the field of procrastination. And at the time, people were like, oh, isn't that funny? You should study me. Got very tired of that joke. And there were a lot of self-help books, but none of them, you know, were based on real research and science.
What led you to studying
that area? You know, it experience of people that I had met that were chronic procrastinators. I had a roommate, for example, that was that way, and he routinely, even though he did great work, would always turn the work in after it was due, and he would get, you know, C's and D's, A for content, D for punctuality, and he just could not change. And there are the treatments that were out there just were not good. And so I published a few scientific papers and got in contact with the other maybe couple of researchers that were in that area. And we formed an informal international network of researchers who were doing serious scholarship and developing treatment for procrastination. And we're now in the second and third generation of researchers. I'm kind of the grandfather of that field. I was reading a book blurb the other day, and it gave a quote that said, you know, grandfather of, and I'm not that old, folks. I'm very glad to have participated. And when I was working, well, I am in the psychology department. I'm in the graduate school also. But when I was just doing that, many of my students did research in procrastination, perhaps 25 did theses in that area, and I'm very glad. Many of them have done work that really is state of the art and findings that, you know, other researchers are just beginning to recognize as important. So I'm very pleased with our graduate programs and the curiosity that our students have.
Briefly, what are some things that have come from that research?
Well, we know that chronic procrastination isn't due to many of the things that, you know, Freud or those people said it was due to. It really appears to be related to cognitive problems, and it seems to be on a spectrum with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. You know, people who have ADHD, almost 100% of them have serious procrastination issues. And when they deal with the ADHD, either through medication or through what we would refer to as behavioral therapy or cognitive therapy, their procrastination gets better. But if they don't deal with that core symptom, it doesn't. So we know that it involves probably some central nervous system mechanisms, probably in the prefrontal areas of the brain. And we're hoping to be able to do neuroimaging sometime along the line to be able to really ascertain what those areas are and perhaps prescribe appropriate medical interventions when necessary.
You've also done a lot of work in compulsive gambling, dealing
yes.
with impulse control. Tell us about that work, because a lot of that's still ongoing.
Yes. Some of it involves laboratory studies, but some of it involves research that we actually did. Ross Kaiser, who's a former professor here, and I, and a woman named Linda Chamberlain, who is a psychologist in Florida, did with gamblers, people who were either at high risk or people who were in recovery. And at the time, almost no one had done research in people who were in recovery for chronic gambling problems. What we found was that gambling acts very much as an addiction, and it is an addiction. And people that develop gambling problems have to quit for life. And at the time, that was not the prevailing sentiment, at least among academicians. It was, it's a learned disorder and you can unlearn it. We disagree completely, and the literature pretty much has proved that we, and Gamblers Anonymous, who has said this for years, are correct. Once you have the addiction, you need to abstain for life.
And you also work with the Louisiana Association for Compulsive Gambling, centered over in Shreveport.
I'm very proud of the fact that I'm able to serve there. The Louisiana Association provides, I think, the best treatment for compulsive gambling in not just the country but the world. They provide inpatient treatment and residential treatment, which is free for Louisiana residents if you don't have the way to pay for it. And they provide intensive outpatient services, which are also free. In the gambling treatment area, you know, a treatment success of about 5 to 10% is considered good. And, you know, the work through the LACG has been able to produce success rates of between 50% and 80%, which is just phenomenal.
You also have an interesting family life story, a little bit developing in recent years.
I became a first-time dad at 50. First time and second time dad at 55, and I'm a stepdad as well. So I have a 20-year-old and an 8-month-old. So we run the whole gamut there, and loving life. And it's just every day is interesting. Being a father is the toughest job you'll ever love, but there's no experience like it.
Part of the focus of this program is dealing with how the university interacts with the community. If somebody saw you outside of the university setting, where would that likely to be?
Probably at a ULM game with my 6-year-old. I mean, he loves the Warhawks. He believes that the Warhawks are a much better football team than LSU. LSU's always losing, and ULM always wins. You know, we have the Warhawks memorabilia all over the house and then some out in the car and places like that. You know, you might see me at community functions where I get a chance to talk about gambling or some of our other areas that we do research on here, dementia, Alzheimer's disease. I basically love people, and I love applying what we know in science about helping people. And that's what I do also for fun. It's my hobby, and it's my life.
Dr. Bill McCown is the director of the Graduate School and the first of our ULM Profile series. Dr. McCown, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.